dock. Around and around and around it goes.
I'm fuming over it.
When you need help, of course, you find that it's not there. That's the sad thing about it.
The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM.
I despair, really.
Conversation that matters.
Hello there and good morning. Cork from the Neil Prendeville Show. Mick Mulcahy in for Neil. Neil returning next Tuesday morning. And let's go to the morning papers, as we always do. Some very sobering headlines and content today. Gardaí probing sex abuse rings claim. More victims, apparently, of religious school sexual abuse are likely to come forward. Paul Hosford, deputy political editor, whom we spoke to yesterday at length on the programme, writes that victim support groups have said that many more victims of sex abuse in schools are likely to come forward as Gardaí probe accusations that organised paedophile rings were preying on school children. Deirdre Kenny, the chief executive of the victim support organisation 1 in 4, said the organisation's helpline was inundated with calls in the 24 hours after a report detailed the sheer scale of the abuse in schools across the country. Miss Kenny said the number of callers indicates there could be many, many more victims who have not yet reported their experience. A scoping report which looked into abuse at schools run by religious orders found almost 2,400, just five short of 2,400 allegations of abuse against 884 abusers in 308 schools across the counties. Material collected during the inquiry has been passed to Gardaí, but over half of those accused are now dead. The book of evidence served on accused dangerous driver leading to death. Liam Halen reporting in The Examiner that a 46-year-old woman accused of dangerous driving in Glanmire causing the death of a special needs assistant in February was served with a book of evidence today. The accused woman, Jennifer Thomas of 10 Oakfield View, Glanmire in Cork, was charged by Detective Garda Mark Durkin at Cork District Court in relation to the case. Evidence was given of her formal arrest charge and caution on this and other related driving charges last month and of the fact that she made no reply to any of the counts against her. You can read that in the Irish Examiner this morning. Decision due on Blarney Hotel is the main headline in the Echo, accompanied with a picture of members of the Naval Service with Tánaiste Ní Mícheál Martin at yesterday's naming and commissioning ceremony of the Ellie Avon and Ellie Gubnett at Hall Bolan Naval Base. And Cork, back to the main headline, Cork Kerry Community Healthcare has said that a final decision on the future use of the former hotel of the Blarney Hotel and Golf Resort is due to be made shortly, with indications that the facility could operate as a rehabilitation unit. The HSE acquired the hotel in 2021 on behalf of Cork Kerry Community Healthcare for a reported €3 million. It's in the area coming up from Tower to a lovely little town with a lovely little kind of Shebeen-type pub in a townland called Mauteha, if I am correct. And it's prime property. You would have thought that maybe a building developer would snap it up, it having the Blarney kind of townland address as well. But there you go. It's the property now of the HSE. And the building was handed over in March 2021. And then Chief Officer of CKCH, Michael Fitzgerald, said the building would be transformed into a 60-bed community nursing unit and will allow us to provide high-quality residential care for older people. That's all in the Echo today. The Echo also has a woman sent forward for trial over fatal crash in Glanmire, pretty much a carbon copy of Liam Helen's story in The Examiner. Man charged in pub arson case also says The Echo today. The Garda investigation into a suspected petrol bomb attack at Murphy's Rock Pub in Ballyvillan on Sunday night resulted in a 32-year-old man being brought before Cork District Court on an arson charge yesterday. Detective Garda Kevin Motherway arrested Stephen McCarthy of Bay 10 Spring Lane Halting Site, Cork, and brought him before the court on seven charges. The first count states that on Sunday, September 1st, at Murphy's Rock, Ballincollie Road in Dublin Hill, he committed arson and that he damaged by fire property, namely doors, windows, blinds, and exterior and interior paint, in intending damage or being reckless as to whether it would be damaged. Now then, to the Daily Mail. Demi Moore is pictured on the front page there, but the main headline says, Child Benefit now added to budget family giveaway. The first increase to the child benefit payment in over a decade will be delivered in next month's budget, the Irish Daily Mail can exclusively reveal. Taoiseach and Fianna Fáil leader Micheál Martin has confirmed an increase from current rates of 140 per month for each child. The rate has remained, it doesn't say what the increase is, but the rate has remained at 140 per month since 2011, but was temporarily cut to 130 during the recession, making this the first hike in 13 years. And there are calls as well from the political sidelines that a second tier children's allowance should be added for those who are in need. What I would ask is, why not means test the first one? I don't think it's a discrimination against any child to means test their parents. The money is for the parents to help support the child. And if they don't need that money, then surely more could be given to those that do need the money. But what people are saying, or what political sideline pundits are saying, is that the government may be considering a second tier, which would be an addition for those that really, really need it. So those who don't need it would still get the children's allowance, and a little more would be given to those who could verifiably do with the few quid. Junior Cert book said, Irish family eat just cabbage and bacon and go to the Fla. The jig is up. A very entertaining story in the Star today. And they're also covering the 2000 school abuse claims being probed. Those are the main headlines in the morning papers. By the way, well done to Red FM Stephanie Rainey. She was on live there with Casey about 15 minutes ago, who did Cork proud at America's Got Talent. Unfortunately, Stephanie, a colleague of hers here at Red FM, didn't make it to the semi-final, but she did an incredible job. And she spoke, as I said, to Casey live from Los Angeles earlier on, and more on the story a little later. Now, just a little bit of housekeeping before we take a quick break and get on with the business of the programme. We had a text from a listener who went to a restaurant in Douglas and ordered an iced latte coffee, to which was delivered, yes, an iced latte coffee, and caramel was requested. So it was a caramel iced latte. And they, when they got their bill, I'm not going to name the restaurant unless we had, I would name the restaurant if we had proof of receipt, but I'm taking this person at their word, okay? So in this Douglas restaurant, the caramel iced latte was billed as €3.75 for the latte, €1 for the caramel squirt, which is free, to be honest, in most of the petrol stations and forecourts around the place right now. €1 for that, and 30 cent for the ice. So that brought it to €3.75, €4.75, €5 and five. And what this texter said to us is that within three sips, the coffee was gone and the glass was full of ice. So why would you be charging for ice in an iced latte? That's like charging on a separate line item for hot water in your coffee or hot water in your tea. So that's just one little thing. And can I just say hello? I promised I would. Bumped into her in town yesterday, and she's always listening to the program, and I promised I would. And that is Shirley, who works in Neville Jewelers on Winthrop Street, serving the public so very well. So hello to you, Shirley, and keep up the good work. Back to the program in a moment.
Text or WhatsApp Neil now, 0868 104 106.
The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM.
Good morning from the Neil Prendeville Show, and we're joined online by Gemma to tell us of a tale of parental stress in the extreme. Morning, Gemma.
Good morning, Mick.
What's stressing you out?
Well, it's come to the preschool that our child was supposed to attend, New Horizons, with Tone Street, has closed suddenly. Our parents were notified by email last week that the kids would not be starting school this week.
Okay, that's New Horizons Montessori and Creche Facility in Blackpool.
It's on Wolftone Street.
Wolftone Street, okay.
It's based on St. Mary's, or St. Vincent's campus, St. Mary's.
Okay.
Road.
And am I to believe that this is the second year in a row this has happened to you? I read a story in the paper yesterday, or maybe the day before, that one child had been kind of knocked back 2 years in a row. Is that your boy?
That's correct. Ah. Rick was supposed to start in the before fives in Churchfields last year, and due to the amount of kids that were based in the school, it was impossible to get a place. So this year he was supposed to start his first year in the ECCE programme. So New Horizons was perfect. It was near both grandparents who mind him, and then we were left devastated again last week.
What happened? They just couldn't open.
So we were notified 2 weeks ago that there was new management coming in to take over the preschool. Absolutely fantastic. No parent had an issue with it. And we heard no more until last Friday, when a majority of parents got an email. I myself still haven't been contacted by the owner of the preschool. I just had a screenshot from another parent saying that they would not be opening. And that was it. We've heard no more. I contacted Thomas Gould in the meantime last week, because we just had a gut feeling that something was going on, but we weren't being told. Thomas was absolutely amazing. He helped so much. He thought he had a solution. The solution fell through. So, now all, I think it's 38 kids in total, just didn't get to start school this week.
Okay, so this is 2 years in a row now. How has that affected the family? Obviously, the grandparents have to step in and do a bit more minding, but he's also not mixing socially, is he?
That's it, and he was born in the times of COVID restrictions, so you can understand that communications weren't available that other kids would have had in the past couple of years. You were limited to contact with people, so that in itself has an effect of kids, I'm going to say, up to the age of four right now. Not just my son, all kids that were born during those times. So to get them into preschool was an opportunity for them to communicate. He was our first child, so there wouldn't have been kids for him to communicate with and interact with playful-wise. So last year, getting him into a preschool was going to be absolutely amazing for him to bring him on and just make friends, basically. So when that fell through, we were saying, OK, we'll work with it at home and work with the grandparents. And as I said, they have been amazing what they do for us. And then this year, it just all fell flat in his face, and it's a kick in the teeth. It's another knockback for the north side. It's just devastating.
This is going on for more than 1 year now, the lack of places on the north side. Is there any solution? Is there any place anywhere, even if you have to drive or whatever?
So, thankfully, I drive and I work pretty locally. We have made contact with a school in the Glen, Glen Troshner Preschool. The girls there were ever so helpful since last Friday. I am currently in the process of hoping to start Reese either the end of this week or early next week. And thanks to the girls up there.
Well, that's a solution at least. But I imagine you're not the only parent in this predicament.
Absolutely not. There's another lady that I read in the article in the paper. She don't drive. They don't have places in her vicinity. And she has been told, actually, that there is no place from next year either, because the waiting list for chock-a-block.
So extra facilities are needed. That's been evident for over a year now, since the closure
it's
of the first
crazy.
Facility.
It's absolutely crazy. The need is there. The government have to step in some shape or form.
And has anything happened with the Before Five facility since its closure?
Not that I know of. So there is a new management company took it over, from what I know, and they need funding. And the funding that they need, I believe, is $350,000 plus.
Oh,
now, that's a lot of money.
Coincidentally, the government just built a bike shed for that amount of money.
Exactly. So that's a lot of money, say, for a business to come up with. For the government, they are spending a lot more than that on other facilities, services. They need to put it into the childcare that's needed. It's in demand. It has been in demand for the last couple of years. But now more than ever, especially on the north side, where the demand for childcare is there, if they could just help in any way, it would be amazing.
Okay, so the Before Five facility is still closed. You had a place in the new one, New Horizons. That doesn't seem to be opening. Would that be fair? It may do, and I don't want to detract from anyone's efforts in trying to get it open. But there is a serious shortage of preschool places on the north side. You might have got away with it with your Glen ladies who are so helpful to you, but there are many more parents who are not so lucky.
Exactly, and those parents, like, they may be working, they may need to sort out Charlie's care, they may have to step away from that to look after their own kids. We were lucky in the situation we were in, that we had family to help us out and let us continue work full time. There's people out there that don't, that they do need the help.
Okay, tell me about your little boy.
Oh, Reese is soon to be 3 years of age. He's a happy-go-lucky fella. He loves kids. We take him to the likes of Monkey Maze and that. And he loves to interact. So for us to be able to get him into school, there's, like, every child wants to go to school at a younger age. And they learn that you have to learn at school. Then they may start to dislike it. But, yeah, he is a happy-go-lucky little fella. And just get him some friends. It's just, that's all we want. And obviously the education then that will follow it in mainstream school.
Okay, but he's going to the Glen, so you're lucky in one way. Other parents aren't, of course.
And I
think you'll be getting onto the Guinness Book of Records if this one falls through, will you?
Oh, definitely. I don't think we could take another kick like that. It's just, like, all we want to do, like, parents want to do everything they can for their kids. And, like, I'm not the only parent that would try bending over backwards if I could to help them. But, like, it's just to get them into preschool. Every child is entitled to go to preschool and get an education of some sort. So why these places are closing continuously, I just don't understand it.
And why they're closing continuously on the north side?
That's a question I can't answer, Mick.
Yeah, well, thank you for coming on and highlighting it. Once again, we are fully aware of the shortage of places on the north side, but you know, when you get the personal impact story from a family, albeit you have a place perhaps now, we realise there are other families who are not so lucky and are going to have to put all those arrangements in place of shortening work hours or enrolling the grandparents, lots of travel and logistics and pain and hassle. We wish Reese and you all the very best. Maybe you could check in again with us in a few weeks and let us know how he's getting on, yeah?
We will do, Mick, and thank you so much.
Thanks, Gemma. Good morning.
Thank you.
Red FM.
Cork's Good Times.
Morning from the Neil Prendeville Show, coming up on 9:30. And Councillor Joe Kavanagh joins us on line one. Good morning, Joe.
Good morning, Mick. How are you?
I'm good. Former Lord Mayor Joe Kavanagh, of course, resident of the North Side, and a little concerned about some of the negative spin that was attaching to Ballyvillane of late. Of course, in two completely isolated incidents. Ballyvillane, the wrong type of light was shone on the community there because these were almost simultaneous incidents, completely unrelated. One, an arson attack, and one a little bit more sinister. Do you want to go into, maybe for those who are listening or maybe not from Ballyvillane who don't know what went on, what's been the events of late in Ballyvillane and the area?
Well, look, there was, as you said, two totally separate incidents. And both of those incidents are under investigation by the Gardaí, so I don't want to go into any specifics as such, because obviously there will be consequences for the perpetrators and so on. So there is an active investigation going on. But as you say, they were totally and utterly unrelated. And look, I suppose I was a bit concerned. And look, I've been snowed under from phone calls from many residents from the area, and I represent the Ballyvillane area. I'm a councillor for the Ballyvillane area. Ballyvillane's a beautiful part of our city. It really is. And look, I'm really genuine about that. I have many friends and acquaintances living in the area. I spent many, many weeks there around in the summertime, and I'm there every day for one reason or another. And people are very concerned about the negative spin, I suppose, and the negative perception in relation to these incidents that occurred by a minority. And look, bear in mind, there are criminal activities being enacted in every various communities right across the city, right across the country, on a daily basis from time to time. And the Gardaí, in fairness, they were on the ball. They're chasing it up. They're following up. And look, they're acting on these issues as they do on all these criminal actions. And I'm assuming there will be some form of consequence, which again is a legal matter, and it's got nothing to do with me. Well, the reason I'm on here this morning is to talk positively about and talk realistically about the area, about the Ballyvillane and that area, the city, and the northeast ward of our city, which is in Ballyvillane, is in that area, is the fastest growing area of the city. We have thousands of houses, brand new houses, being built from the Fox and Hounds all the way out to White's Cross. It's going to be absolutely magnificent, a totally there's a total transformation en route for that corner of the city, for the better. And there's magnificent sporting facilities, one of the top GAA clubs in the county, if not in the country, in the Glen. You know, we have soccer clubs, we have everything there. And obviously, no matter how much you have, people will be looking for more. And it's always a good sign.
Yeah, I used to travel through through Ballyvillan 5 days a week and have lunch in the Fox and Hounds at least 3 of those days when we inhabit when we inhabited a building in a radio station about 35 years ago. And you'd go to the cross there at Dunn's, whichever way you arrive there, and out the road to White's Cross. And after the first couple of estates, Meadow Park, and I'm not sure what the next one is called, on the hill with the church there, you're literally in the countryside. Yeah. You're literally in the countryside. Now, it's gone a bit further, but that's prime land for development, as you say, all the way to White's Cross. And it benefits from, of course, proximity to the North Ring, from all the facilities of that Dunn's complex, from very good bars and restaurants, including Murphy's Rock. Now, just to concentrate on that one, in a completely separate incident to the one that happened in Meadow Park, there's now a Garda investigation into a suspected petrol bomb attack at Murphy's Rock pub in Ballyvillan on Sunday night last, and a 32-year-old man is being brought before Cork District Court, or was yesterday brought before Cork District Court. Damage there was well, obviously by fire. Doors, windows, blinds and exterior and interior paint. Intending damage or being reckless as to whether it would be damaged. That's a fine property. It's a huge, huge Liverpool centre of support and probably, and I know this from experience, one of the finest carvery and carvery offerings that's available in Cork today.
Well, Murphy's Rock is as a pub is the centre of the local community in terms of hospitality and so on, and continues to grow and develop and provides a wonderful meeting place from a social perspective for people. And it was victim to a criminal act last weekend. And look, at the end of the day, well done to the security people there and the staff. Management and staff for deflating the situation, and of course the Gardaí for acting so promptly and dealing with the issue. Now it's in front of the court, so I can't talk about it. Obviously not. But by the same token, you know, I've spoken to dozens of residents over the last few days who've expressed a concern about these acts in the local community. And, you know, these are people who've raised their families and have grown old and bought their properties and have literally lived their lives in the Ballyvillan area, which is a beautiful area of the city. And I can't emphasize that enough.
What about the other incident, Joe? The one, was it Meadow Park?
Meadow Park, yeah. There was an incident there as well, which seems to be related to an ongoing feud between various groupings in the city, and related to an incident that occurred the week before or whatever. But again, that's under Garda investigation. There was apparently an incident, somebody throwing an incendiary device at a property in the estate. But again, like, this is not something, this is not an isolated incident. It's related to other incidents that have occurred around the city. And again, this is under investigation by the authorities at the moment. And there will be consequences, I'm assuming. And so, look, I'm really only concerned about the residents who are not involved in any shape or form in this. But
which is 99.99% of the community there, to be fair.
You're 100% right, you're talking about a significant minority that are causing major problems and grief and concern for the greater community in our city. And look, in fairness to the Gardaí, they're doing the very best they can with the resources they have to try and, I suppose, deflate these issues and get to the bottom of what happened and put an end to it once and for all. Because this is, again, a very, very quiet, residential, settled area of our city, and these residents are just simply not used to this type of activity.
What are they saying to you, Joe? That this is unlike Ballyvillan, this is going to devalue our properties, this is going to make it a very undesirable place for people's perception, you know, of wanting to live there?
No, they're just afraid. They're just not used to, as I said, there, Mick, like, they're not used to this type of activity. They're not hardened people living in the community that are used to this thing happening on an ongoing basis. This is something that has completely popped out of the blue. And look, this type of activity, people are afraid for themselves, they're afraid for their children and their neighbours, and they're just not used to it, and they don't want it in their community. End of story, just don't want it. Like, this area has never really doesn't have any criminal record of any description, any criminal activity history of any description, and people just were just concerned for their well-being and so on, and for their own community, which they've grown old in and they've brought up their families in. And as I said to you, and I can't say it enough times, it is a beautiful part of our city, and we need to protect our city from this type of activity.
Put you on the spot, Joe. I said at the beginning of my stint here for Neil, he's back on Tuesday, I'd ask everyone in the political arena their opinion on the upcoming election. Is it going to be this year? Is it going to be next year? I know it's the gift of Taoiseach alone.
That is the gift of the Taoiseach, I suspect. No, I've heard him say, and I'm as wise as you are, to be honest with you, and I know I'm a member of a government party, but they're not going to ring me up and tell me when the election is going to be on. But
Would it be all right if we went to the country, Joe?
Would it be all right if we went to the country?
That's the call that would happen. Joe, on Taoiseach here, would it be okay if I went to the country? Just your thoughts.
Do you know something, Mick? I'd be quite confident going to the country now, because, do you know what? There's enough intelligent people in the country that know the country is being well served by the current government, and there's enough intelligent people there to return and keep the good times going.
With 336,000 euro bike sheds, Joe, that's going to be on the doorsteps. Well, I tell you, when people knock on the door this season or next season, whatever it's going to be, they're going to get one thing only. What about the bike shed? It's two days into it, and nobody knows who signed off on it. And the media won't stop until that person is found. I know it's not anything to do with you. I have it on very good authority. Now, bear in mind, I had it on very good authority the other day that Alex Ferguson had passed away, and that was a scam, right? We spotted that immediately, but even somebody in his close circle of friends was caught. And that's why I felt it warranted a mention.
Oh, my God.
I'm going to mention another scam after I finish talking to you. And I have it on very good authority that the election will be taking place late October, early November. So there you go.
The rumour is it'll be sometime in November, but there's also rumour it'll be the middle of March.
I know. And that's, as we say, down to the gift of the Taoiseach alone. Joe, you're a very efficient public servant. You're always there when we need you to talk to you. So thank you very much. Councillor Joe Kavanagh, every best wish for the future. Have you got national ambitions, Joe?
Not at the moment, Mick, no.
Put you on the spot again there. Thanks a million, Joe Kavanagh, Fine Gael councillor and former Lord Mayor. Now, speaking of scams and sharing stuff that is untrue, we received this actually at home with a Ballincollig tag to it. There's a warning now on sharing a missing child post. Spam stories of a lost little boy are flooding social media. Online fraudsters are using heartbreaking photos and a sad story of a lost toddler. Now, the toddler's picture looks as though they've been involved, I won't say in physical violence, but perhaps in a fall. There's an enlarged lip, a big bruised lip, and a bruise on the little guy's forehead. It's a very sad picture. But social media users have been warned about a savvy scam targeting well-meaning Facebook users with fabricated stories of lost and abused children. Fake posts about a lost little boy have been widely shared on community pages across Ireland. I don't know what the benefit of this is. I can't see anybody getting pay-per-clicks here or anything. But they are preying on the goodwill of people. This is a spam story cropping up over and over in the last few weeks, with each post suspiciously sharing many similar details alongside exploitative pictures of sad children. There's one in particular, the one I have here is the one that we got at home as well. Black eyes and bruises on the face of the child. It's a story of a missing child that's been doing the rounds across the country, and it was spotted in many community pages this week, including some in Cork, because Ballincollig was tagged to it, as well as being shared countless times by people trying to help. And this is kind of how the text goes. This little boy, approximately 3 years old, was found about 1 hour ago in In this case, it's Waterford. In our case, it was Ballinconnig. It could be Tralee. It could be Cove. It could be anything. Insert what you like there on behalf of the scammers if you want to keep this stupid chain letter going. Officers have the child safe at the police station, in our case, at Ballinconnig, but we have no idea where he lives. No one has called looking for him. Please bump this post. So it's a kind of an illicit chain letter. And I have one rule about chain letters. They stop with me. They never get in any form. Pass on and you'll get 10 years of good luck. Don't pass on and you lose the power of your arse or something like that. They stop with me. I just walk away from them. Do not forward chain letters. But anyway, if you see this, a very sad picture, two pictures of a boy approximately 3 years old. It's tugging at the heartstrings. A boy found wandering in a daze, picked up by, in our case, it was a certain deputy, a Doyle deputy, and delivered to the Garda station, where the child is now awaiting contact from those who love him, apparently. So it's tugging at all the heartstrings. The police station, the Gardaí, etc., have no idea where he lives. The fact that it says police station instead of Garda station would tell you this emanated out of the UK. But no one has called looking for him. Please bump this post so we can get him in touch with his parents. Don't fall for it. It's a kind of a sad, heart-tugging, false circulation. So don't get involved in that. I need to give this a mention before the programme gets busy. From the creators of Ireland's Fittest Family, Cork East Athletic Sporting Committee have teamed up with the legendary GAA coach Davy Fitzgerald. They're fundraising for a new inclusive regional running track and field facility in East Cork. It's called the Cork East Superstars. And the event will take place this coming Saturday, 10 a.m. in a Hada GAA club in Rostellan, and will feature a 9-piece obstacle course where competitors can test their mettle against a number of different challenges. So if you want to see something like Ireland's Fittest Family, and this event will be overseen by the well-known hurling pundit and former All-Ireland winning Bonnishtore, Davy Fitzgerald, who is the creator of Ireland's Fittest Family, the TV show on RTE. So it's going to be a bit of crack, going to be a bit of fun, family against family, fitness against fitness, taking place this Saturday, September 7th at 10 a.m. in a Hada GA club in Rostellan. While you're there, call into Rosie, say hello to Vince and Mary, and get some of the best food on offer in Cork as well. Now, I promised yesterday, finally, I would give this a mention. Hi, Mick, a second mention, because it does deserve it. Hi, Mick, I'm part of the NAR Anon group, who are trying to set back up the meetings and support the families of people with drug addiction. We'll be starting back on Thursday, the 5th of September. That's today, at the Dominican Centre, Pope's Quay, at 7 p.m. I would really appreciate if you could give us a mention. The telephone number is 086-1755-122 for further information. That's 086-1755-122. Please don't mention my name, as confidentiality is very important in this group. So if you're part of a family that could benefit from NAR Anon meetings, they're reconvening tonight, Thursday, 7 p.m. at the Dominican Centre, Pope's Quay. And the number once again is 086-1755-122.
Call Neil now. 0818-104-106.
The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM.
Morning from the Neil Prendeville Show. It's 12 minutes to 10 o'clock. Now, some of us have seen more than once people out shopping in their pyjamas. You see them at your local convenience store. You may see them in the German multiples like Lidl and Aldi. Maybe not so much in the larger operators like Tesco and Dunnes and that kind of thing. But I certainly have more than once seen people pop into the shop in their pyjamas. Well, Seamus Whelan was out and about recently asking people their thoughts on wearing nightwear or pyjamas in public.
There's one thing I need to ask you. What time is it? Pajama time, pajama time. What time is it? Pajama time.
Well, I wouldn't like to be going around in my pyjamas anyway, you know, so yeah, I think it is right.
Would you mind somebody coming into a coffee shop that you're in, maybe having a coffee in the morning and watching them wearing their pyjamas? Would it put you off?
It would, yeah.
Why is that?
Because I think it's just not right. Pyjamas is for home, like in bed.
Do you think they're lazy, so?
Yes. Well, it's their own decision of what they're wearing coming in, to be honest, like, that's my opinion on it, like.
Would you do it yourself?
No. I wouldn't, but I wouldn't, like, you know, I wouldn't tell, I wouldn't serve somebody only because they're wearing pajamas, like, you know. It's their own choice.
You don't think to put off the other customers?
Put me off. Maybe.
Would it put you off? Why is that?
No, why? Just because, like, they look like they're just out of bed. Like, they look like they're not putting any effort in.
But what if it was their going out pajamas?
You have a pair of going out pajamas and a pair of staying in pajamas, and you need to kind of reevaluate life. I think just one pair of pajamas for the house for sleeping, that's it, you know.
I suppose there is a dress code, but are they doing any harm? If it was my shop, no, I wouldn't.
You'd serve them anyway.
I'd serve them, of course I would. I mean, do you know what's the difference between a pajamas and a pants, really? They're covered up. I presume they were respectable looking. And what's the harm in it?
Like, and if you were in a coffee shop and they came in and they were sitting down with their fluffy slippers and pajamas, would it put you off your breakfast?
No. Would it put you off?
It depends on what they're wearing.
Well, of course, yeah. Of course. Yeah.
Pajamas are a house. They're pajamas. They're your house.
Like, you could have one for going out and one for staying at home.
I'd like you to show me a going out pajamas. I don't think I've ever seen a going out pajamas.
Like, people need to, like, respect their environment, I think.
Do you think they're lazy, so not getting dressed in the morning?
Yeah. Definitely, yeah.
Would you ever do it yourself?
Not a chance would I walk in to a shop with just slippers and socks or something, or whatever they're wearing. So,
would it put you off sitting down having your coffee, watching it in the mornings? Someone coming in their fluffy slippers?
It probably would, yeah, because you'd look at it straight away. No, it's each their own, I suppose, but, like, why wouldn't you get dressed in the morning?
Well, personally speaking, I wouldn't do it. I wouldn't. No, no, I don't. I think it's not appropriate. No. No, not good into shops or coffee shops or anything like that, no. I wouldn't agree with it. They're only for bathing around the house. It only takes 5 minutes to put on a pair of leggings, that's my shop.
To put my PJ on, just go ahead and call them anything you want, like pajamas, jammies, or the things I lounge in, knickerbockers, night clothes, or a nightgown in a union suit, or a onesie, or a footie. I could cover up my head with a great big hoodie.
That is our pajama vox, and that is out and about on the streets of Cork with Seamus Whelan. Now we're back to the streets of Cork and to Cork's own very, very own Hugh Hefner. Joseph, good morning.
Good morning, Mick. How are you today?
I'm very good. You're Joseph, of course, the famous Joseph of Joseph's Hair Salon in Glasheen, and you wear pyjamas in public.
I do, Mick, but it would depend on the pyjama.
Right.
I wouldn't wear a fluffy, you know, those fluffy things with the hoods and the little kind of knobby things on them from overwashed or
like
whatever.
Like the onesie, is it?
Silk. Yeah, I wear silk. I would wear long silk trousers, pajamas, trousers, and a top, and then in the summer, matching, and then in the summer, I'd have the shorts with a pajamas top. But they would be classy, they would be nice and silky, and I could be sitting down then at home thinking, oh my God, I'd love a 99. Off we go in the car, and down the drive, and I go in and get the two 99s.
Yeah, I had to go and buy pyjamas for a relative recently and went in the Wilton area, went to Tesco and to Penny's. And even though they had pyjamas, the staff there said, we only have ones with short pants. We don't have long-legged pyjamas. We don't seem to have them in the summer. And I thought that was strange. I eventually got them in Dunn's. But I found it strange that even pyjamas would come in short pants style. But they do, and the long pants ones weren't available.
No, I'll be going into long pants ones now at the end of the month, but I'll be short all the way. But the pyjamas now, they can look so classy and so stylish.
And they can look like a cheap tracksuit as well.
Well, there'd be nothing I'd be wearing that would look cheap now, Mick, in all fairness.
I wouldn't doubt you.
You know, see, a lot of it is how you wear these things. I was in the Martha Private as a patient, and I think the staff every morning used to be waiting to see what I'd have on me.
Oh, it was like a fashion show, was it?
Yeah, I'd have my pyjamas and then I might have a nice long silk dressing gown over it. But I wouldn't go out in a dressing gown, I'd just go out in the PJs. But when I say go out now, I'd go into Centre maybe, or Super Value, I'd have no problem, or up to an ice cream machine. I wouldn't go into a restaurant now, I wouldn't do something like that. I think that would be a bit disrespectful.
Yeah, to be fair to Hugh Hefner, he kind of immortalised the dressing gown, but I've never seen Hugh Hefner wear that kind of regalia outside of photo shoots. You know, and documentaries, you see him around the Playboy Mansion or something. When he went out clubbing with the dozens and dozens of girls in tow, he was always dressed very dapper.
Oh, yeah, totally, yeah. But times are changing now.
What's your stock of pajamas like, Joe?
Well, we'd have one different one for... I might get two evenings out of the one pajamas.
Okay.
You know, so we'd have a change maybe every other day, every other evening.
Right,
and but they would be, as I say, different colours, different, you know, different designs, and they would be fairly classy looking now. And then we'd have the Christmas ones. We'd have four different pyjamas for Christmas.
And why do you do it? Do you do it for the fun, the spectacle? Do you do it for the comfort or what?
I do it for comfort. When I go home, first thing I do when I go home and I'm not going out for the evening, I'd have my shower and into my pajamas, and then, as I say, I get the munchies. Then I say, "Oh God, I'd love something nice." Or run down to KC's or over to Dino's and get a bag of chips. I'm not going to go back into my clothes again. I'm in my comfies. They look well. I'm often admired, and the people say, "Oh God, I'd love that."
Yeah, a lot of people, you know, make the definition between work and relaxation at home by coming home, either having the shower or not, but by getting straight into their pajamas.
Yeah. Well, I'd be straight into pajamas. Shower fall straight into the pajamas. But then I'm kind of thinking, oh, it's 8 o'clock now, and I'd love a 99 or I'd love a bar of chocolate.
So you go out in the pajamas to get them?
Out in the pajamas then, and over to Centre or Super Value or to the ice cream van there in Douglas.
And do you wear them in Joseph's hair salon?
No. I wear shorts and a top.
Okay. Shorts through the summer, every day.
What we do at Christmas, we'd wear them on Christmas. Some days, Christmas, we all come in our Christmas pyjamas.
That's a bit of fun, that's fine. All right,
yeah,
Joe, you intend to continue doing it. Would you not try the Hugh Hefner silk dressing gown and head out in the town, no?
Not just to Jesus, I don't know. I went out in town with a pair of skinnies one day and someone said to me, "My God, you're still wearing them at this hour of your life." So
you're going to get that too. Joseph, thank you very much.
Now I go for 99. That's my going out.
All right. You're very good, Joe, and you've a big heart and do so much for charity. Thank you so much. Joseph from Joseph's Hair Salon in Glasheen. If you want to get in touch with the programme, it's 0818 104 106 by phone or by text 0868 104 106. News at 10 is next.
The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM. Conversation that matters.
2,995, I think, almost 2,400 allegations of historical sexual abuse have been made at more than 300 religious-run schools across the country. And we've already been contacted by family members of survivors of the latest schools abuse scandal. And of course, it's not going to be all-encompassing, with helplines now inundated yesterday, with family members, with victims themselves, and many more coming forward to say, "I want to add my name to that sorry list." On line two is Deirdre Kenny, who is the CEO of One in Four. Good morning, Deirdre.
Good morning.
Now, you're a charity that provides therapy, advocacy and information for adults who have experienced childhood sexual abuse. Is this just in the remit of the institutions, of the schools, or is it more open than that?
No, it's much broader than that. We work with all adults who've had an experience of childhood sexual abuse, regardless of the circumstances. But I suppose traditionally we would have been known for the work that we've done with survivors of the institutions and clerical sexual abuse. So I guess this issue in terms of our schools is something that has been to the fore in our minds for probably the last 15 years. It first surfaced in the Ryan and Murphy reports back in 2009. And this week we've seen again, I suppose, the extent, probably more clearly this week, the extent of the issue in our day schools over the last number of decades.
Yeah, so you would have been supremely aware that this was going on a widespread basis. We've all been you know, we've all been through the Brendan Smith type revelations, and it's safe to say I think everybody knew something very bad was going on here historically. Were you shocked by the level and the tenor of the report that came out?
Sadly not, I have to say. Again, as you said, we'd be very familiar with the type of disclosures that the participants in the scoping inquiry made. This issue has been to the fore for a number of years. I guess what is difficult to comprehend is the scoping inquiry have put together the statistics of complaints that, as you mentioned, were collected by the various religious orders. So I think when you see that collectively, and what we know about this issue is that the CSO tells us from their statistics that it is likely very underreported.
Mm-hmm.
So if you take that figure of, you know, 2,400 allegations, and then, I mean, our name, one in four, speaks to the statistic of the number of people who've likely experienced.
You're looking at 10,000
well,
people.
Potentially, you know, it's the scope of this, of a commission to inquire, if it is and when it happens, could be just like on a scale we've never seen before. So it's hard to digest. It's hard to, I think, for people to process. And I guess we often go to a place of disbelief when we hear things that are very, you know, kind of hard to imagine. But yeah, I mean, it's been a reality for far too many people for far too long.
Yesterday's report, Deirdre, falls short, perhaps somewhat justifiably, in that it cannot anyway cover everybody. Those people are coming forward now, having been maybe a little emboldened by the fact that this is getting serious now. There's going to be some redress and retribution for those who committed those acts. Perhaps not so justifiably, though, it falls short in that it didn't include schools not run by religious congregations.
Yes, the original remit came about because of the Black Rock Boys documentary, and it focused on a particular school run by a particular religious order. So the remit of the scoping was to look at the religious congregations and their running the schools that they run. But one of the recommendations the scoping inquiry makes is that this should be extended to all schools, which is something we would absolutely agree with. And I don't know how the government will get around not doing that. You can't there's nothing to say that schools that were run by any other institution would be have been any different. And certainly, you know, anecdotally, that's what we know from our work. So it remains to be seen. We'll see what happens. But I think it wouldn't be appropriate to exclude people based on, you know, the fact that the school was actually run by some institution other than a religious order.
There's no less innocence lost. As I mentioned in reporting on it yesterday, the report was an appalling revelation of a parallel world, a world in which these children were the cannon fodder for paedophiles and other sort of sadists, hiding under the veneer of respectability of their orders and the respectability that was portrayed to the benign general public, shall we say. But these people... and it's not just, I think, the criminals who betrayed the trust of the country and raped and sexually abused the children. But to some extent, there's complicit people in their circle who would have moved them around so that they could offend again. And that is unforgivable.
It's very difficult to comprehend the dynamic that created the pervasive issue across. And you can see, again, going far as back as the Ryan report, how, you know, religious members were moved around. But one of the stark aspects of the scoping inquiry and the testimonies that survivors gave to that is that people knew and did nothing. Not just, you know, religious communities. It suggested even lay teachers knew and did nothing. So I think, yes, absolutely, the institutions have a lot to answer for. But we also need to probably look at ourselves as a society and see, you know, what creates that paralysis when we see things that don't look okay. You know, can we learn lessons as a society around that? And do we have, is there, you know, something that we need to take responsibility for? And again, that message from survivors is age old. We know that people have said, you know, parents knew to a degree, may not have understood. Other teachers knew, you know, I suppose the common phrase is the dogs in the street knew.
Yeah. They blindly trusted their church for the most part.
Exactly. And I guess we are blindly trusting other institutions now, like tech companies and children's children have phones, maybe, and I think there was another report out this week that spoke to the fact that children are disturbed by some of the content that they've seen online. So, you know, are we repeating patterns from the past? There's a lot of questions that I think we need to reflect on in terms of child protection in this country at the moment.
Yeah, we've seen some very, very substantial media figures who used their cloak of respectability and their notoriety and their fame. You know, Jimmy Savile comes to mind, perhaps Ralph Harris, but used that veneer of respectability to prey on innocent children. But it's not as if hundreds of paedophiles suddenly found themselves in a sweet shop, as it were. It's more to me, it seems like these orders provided the refuge because they were trusted by the public and so attracted the paedophiles in so they could commit their vile acts. Would that be correct?
Again, I'm sure it's very difficult to say. I mean, unfortunately, the religious communities in any powerful institution will have its own powerful dynamic where, you know, people will manipulate and groom children. So on an individual basis, there's probably unique dynamics, but certainly that seems to be the case. But it's very, again, it's something that I think we need to grapple with and get to understand more. So we don't repeat the pattern where any institution, regardless of whether it's a religious or otherwise, doesn't continue to have that amount of power in our society. Because when that happens, children and other vulnerable aspects of our society are exploited. And we, you know, that's, again, we can see on a daily basis how people are impacted by that. And it's not till people are in adulthood that they understand that, you know, that was the case and that what happened wasn't okay or wasn't normal.
I don't think we can heal as a society without the media shining a very strong spotlight on issues such as this so that there is change enacted. Are children safe in schools now? Is this gone beyond the possibility of ever happening again because of technology, because of new social media, because the society at large is willing to tackle it now?
Well, I think that remains to be seen. Certainly in the report, it speaks to a much stronger mechanism around child protection now. But what I would concern me is our child protection system kind of future-proofed in terms of the exposure children have to technology? And I'm not sure we've got our heads around that yet. And that would be an area of concern. We don't need another inquiry in 20 years, you know, to speak to the fact that our children were exposed to material or the location of the abuse had changed. It may not have been in a contact form, but, you know, kids are now exposed to things that we can't imagine via their phones. So that's something that we need to get our heads around.
Yeah, you seem to be concentrating strongly on technology. And I suppose the report, even though it only spans 30 years, I can only imagine the depth of depravity that happened before 30 years ago when the church had an even stronger grip on society. But on the technology side, are you alluding to the fact that children may now be being sexually abused mentally rather than physically because of the content they can find on phones?
Potentially, the location or, again, CyberSafe Kids had a report out this week and it, you know, ironically it came out the same day as the scoping inquiry. And there were parallels there, you know, kids saying they felt, you know, disturbed or uncomfortable by the exposure that they had to content online. So, in some way, the irony of us talking about things that have happened 30 or 40 years ago, when potentially, if we don't keep a close eye on it, we now have created a blind spot, you know, to what our kids are currently exposed to. So it's just being mindful that if we can't put the responsibility on victims and survivors to highlight this issue, we need to get ahead of it and we need to be aware of what's possible. And as you said, you know, institutions, when they have that kind of power in our society, they can influence and, you know, they have that persona of not being able to do any wrong and that we can't challenge, then we make our children vulnerable to that power.
Yeah,
and that's our history.
With a lot of the alleged perpetrators having passed on, I think we need to move quickly here because not only that, but the majority of the victims have gone through the greater part of their lives carrying the emotional scars and the mental difficulties, which has cast a shadow over the remainder of their lives. And that's That's the even sadder part of the innocence being taken, is that it can't be forgotten. It causes trauma for the rest of the victim's life.
Exactly. And victims in the scoping inquiry have very clearly pointed out that they want accountability, transparency and a non-adversarial approach, which we know from our work will support them to, I suppose, in some way get acknowledgement and potentially justice. And again, redress may be part of that, and that's certainly in the mix for the government to make a decision on, and we'd be urging them to do that sooner, to prioritise that and make sure that that redress process
The blame is at their door, really, because they abdicated their responsibility their responsibility to the most vulnerable element of society back then, the children, into the arms of the religious orders, most of whom I'm sure were set up with noble intentions, but became what they became because of this fringe element of paedophiles and abusers.
Exactly. Yeah, and I think, you know, we're at risk of defaulting to a very legalistic process and looking at this through a legal lens, which is obviously helpful to a point. But what survivors have been very clear about is that does potentially can cause further harm to them because of the trauma that you described. So again, we just need to keep their needs and their what they deserve central to whatever process the government...
Do they all deserve financial redress at this stage because of the state's failure, including support financially in that process, from the religious orders under whose ruse this was perpetrated?
Survivors are individuals and they've had, you know, very unique experiences, so I wouldn't want to put them all in one look at it. In the scoping, they actually comment on the fact that not all the survivors were advocating for a redress scheme but did feel that there are people who may be part of their recognition that they deserve, or even from a practical point of view, compensation can be helpful to try and mitigate some of the losses that people have suffered. So, you know, it may be not for everyone, but it's important that people have the opportunity to do that. And if that's what they feel they need. So again, it's probably, you know, we need to think not everybody's the same, not everybody's needs are the same, not everybody's experiences are the same, but we do know the impact can be long lasting and lifelong for some people. And they, you know, whatever their experience has been, people deserve whatever it takes to try and mitigate that harm.
Yeah, for a relatively young republic, we've had far too many troubling chapters in our modern history. This is a shameful chapter. And I don't want to keep dwelling on the negative, because we have to. And the survivors have to look to the future. How do they heal? How do they move on? How do they put it behind them, if ever they can?
Well, again, they've spoken loud and clear in the scoping inquiry, and it is that we certainly know from our work that part of moving on will be that kind of recognition that they deserve, that whatever happened wasn't their fault and they are not responsible for this. And part of that can be, you know, a commission to inquire or, you know, a legal process. So I think if we can, even as community, like, you know, none of us are lawyers, or, you know, on our day-to-day life, we probably know people who've been impacted by this. And it is about being able to acknowledge that harm and be compassionate in our responses. And then, you know, there is room for the legal processes too, but I think we all need to hold that responsibility to some extent, because otherwise, you know, survivors aren't getting the response that they need from all of us.
Well, let's hold out the hand of support. If anyone of our listeners has been affected by the content of this conversation, www.oneinfour, that's not numbers now, that's spelling, oneinfour.ie may be of help. Are there any other areas or any other organisations, depending on people's needs, that you would direct them to?
Yeah, look, there's the National Helpline run by the Red Crisis Centre. There's the Samaritans. And again, I think if you even log on to the Department of Education scoping inquiry, there's a list of support organisations there, including ourselves. And I'm sure there's local organisations for people too that they may be familiar with. And look, you know, if you've got a friend or a loved one who you trust, you know, sometimes that's the first source of support. And when these reports come out, you know, people, I've certainly spoken to a few people this week who said, you know, I picked up the report to see, or I logged on to see if my school was in it. And, you know, your school may not be there, but that doesn't mean that somebody hasn't been impacted that you know. So again, it's just about keeping an open mind and trying to respond to this compassion. And we find that's where survivors get.
Yeah, my own primary school was in it twice. It was reported twice, one in its English name and one in its Irish name. So I'm not sure if that was a mistake or if it's, I don't know.
Yeah, again, the vast nature of, as we've spoken about, the scope of this has meant that even, I'm actually in some ways don't know how the scoping inquiry managed to kind of get all the data together in 18 months, but certainly there seems to be some anomalies, but they've done a huge job. It's a fascinating look at a very dark, as you say, chapter of our history. But we're conscious of the impact on people, and it is so important if people can feel able, maybe not just this week, but even down the road, to reach out for support. It does help, and I think that's what people deserve.
Yeah, and as much as these victims were abused in a parallel world, as I said, let's hope there's a parallel effort. The state now, albeit late, and the state is always late, now needs to find some balance of retribution. Not retribution, but redress financially for these people. And in parallel, I would advise that maybe they go to an organisation like your own, www.oneinfour.ie, that's the spelling of oneinfour.ie, or indeed you can Google the Department of Education Scoping Inquiry, and there you'll get a full list of supports. That's correct, isn't it?
Yes, that's right. Yeah.
All right. Deirdre Kenny, well done on all the work you do in therapy, advocacy and information for adults who have experienced childhood sexual abuse. Keep up the good work. Thank you and good morning.
Thanks so much. Take care.
The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM.
Conversation that matters.
It's 10:30. Good morning. This is Mick Mulcahy on The Neil Prendeville Show. Now, this programme by its very nature contains a hell of a lot of variety. We jump around topics. We try to cover everything. And the reflection of that is in the texts that come in. So I'm going to go through some of the texts on various topics today. So on childcare places, where we spoke to Gemma, those empty preschool places will soon be filled with illegal military-aged men. Open your eyes and see what's going on. Irish lives don't matter. Good morning. Listening to the stressful calls from parents regarding childcare, or lack of, I would like to bring to the public's attention that all Ukrainian families have free creche places. That applies to Ukrainian parents who are both working. They still receive free creche places, thereby putting pressure on the Irish population. This is being checked. This is completely unconfirmed right now. I'm reading the text out for what it is and how it came in, but we are checking if that is in fact true. So don't take it as gospel just yet. On Ballyvillan, we spoke to former Lord Mayor and Councillor for Fine Gael, Joe Kavanagh. I have two houses in Meadow Park. The City Council are buying the houses in Meadow Park and giving them to people who are not respecting their homes. Another text just says, why dance around the obvious common denominator in all the trouble in Ballyvillan? The community is going to the dogs because of these people being parachuted in by Cork City Council. We are dealing with it on a daily basis up here, they say in Ballyvillan. So that would lead me to believe that those two incidents are not isolated. They have been highly publicised, of course. But if you take that as read, there's a lot of other maybe more minor incidents and public order incidents going on up there. I'm open to correction. If anybody wants to come on and love Ballyvillan like Joe Kavanagh seems to, you're more than welcome. You can phone us at 0818 104 106 or text us on 0868 104 106. Back to the bike shed. We covered it in great detail over the last couple of days, so we're not going to really go back to it as a topic now. But by text, Mick, it would be interesting to find out if the company who built the bike shed is actually from the Republic of Ireland, or was it given to someone outside the country? And where and what were the other tenders priced at? Surely this is information that can be found under an FOI request. That's Freedom of Information. Don't worry, we're on it. The whole country is trying to find out just who did it, what the tendering process was, what the losing tenders were, and who signed off on it. Because I can guarantee you when the politicians come to your door, more than likely late October, but most likely early November, all they're going to get is when they give you their pitch, what about the bike shed? It's going to be a huge issue. On the lost child scam, which we covered on the programme this morning, hide the pic of the child on Facebook scam. What they do is they have it shared around the world and then they replace the picture of the child with real estate, like a house in New York, etc. That way they have a lot of potential buyers because the post has been shared so many times. It popped up on my news feed a while back, thanks. Fake posts are the scam, says another texter. The coding of the posts has malware embedded. If you click on the post or share it, the malware is installed on your own device and then the trouble starts, so says Pa. On the subject of the far right, hi Mick, instead of asking politicians if there'll be election this year or next, particularly when they can't and won't answer, could you not ask them to define far right, seeing as how they constantly use this term incorrectly, says Richie in Toker. Yeah, I do take it. The term far right has been bandied about far too much. We had a very law-abiding, normal citizen, John O'Mahony from Watergrass Hill, being labelled far right by a politician was it last Friday? I think it was last Friday. And a nicer guy you couldn't meet, but seem by talking to him on the radio anyway, who wanted to just do a peaceful referendum on an issue in Watergrass Hill and came back to us with all of the exact figures, but yet was labelled far right. And a thank you. Could you please give a shout out and a special thanks to John Corcoran, who works in the bus Erin depot in Parnell Place, who helped my aunt get off the bus. She's in a wheelchair and phoned a mobile accessibility taxi for her. He could not have been more helpful and kind in his chat to her. A gentleman in the highest order. You got his name anyway, which is good. It's John Corcoran. Take a bow, John Corcoran. Take a bow, Bus Aaron, in this instance. Love the show. Regards, Jer from Ardfert. Now, all is not good in the world of buses, however. Good morning, Zara.
Good morning. How are you?
Nice to hear something good about the buses, because predominantly we're getting lots of complaints. We had Thomas Gould on during the week, maybe it was last Friday, I don't remember, about the buses in particular areas. But anyway, you were waiting for the 220 or 220 X bus to Crosshaven for an hour and 40 minutes. When was this, yesterday or today?
That's correct. Yeah, it was on Tuesday.
Oh, Tuesday, okay.
I went to, I wanted to take the bus at 4 p.m, but it showed that the next bus was at 4:45. So I made my way to the bus stop at 4:30, and I was there waiting until the bus eventually showed up at 6:20.
So it arrived at 6:20. It was meant to be there at 4:45. So that's an hour and 35 minutes late.
Yeah.
That's incredible.
Yeah. Yeah, shocking.
Whatever the excuses are, you know, that there are bottlenecks, there's traffic, they don't have enough drivers, whatever. This service at that time, when students have finished college or whatever, or secondary school, that would seem to be a very important service to be on time.
Exactly, yeah. When I arrived there, there were already a lot of students in uniform waiting, so they must have waited for about 2 hours. I got chatting to an older lady and she was in tears saying she had waited for nearly 3 hours. She was saying that she was so tired from standing and her legs were sore.
Yeah, an elderly lady. How long was she there?
She said that she had been there from 3:40 p.m. So the bus showed up at 6:20, so she's been there since.
So she was there 3 hours?
Nearly 3 hours, yeah. And the Grand Parade bus stop doesn't have any seating, so everyone was left standing for all this time.
But were you all picked up and eventually get to Crosshaven or wherever?
So eventually the first bus that showed up was only going to Carrigaline, but about a minute after another bus came that was going to Crosshaven.
Would you not take the Carrigaline one as getting it almost home?
Yeah, so that was the plan. So I had chatted to my partner, and if there was, if I couldn't see another bus coming for Crosshaven, he would have come and picked me up from Carrigaline. But there weren't any buses to Carrigaline either during that time.
And what sort of condition was this elderly lady in? Had she somewhere to sit?
no seating, no.
No seating in that particular bus stop?
Yeah.
So she was emotional and upset, was she?
She was, yeah.
Tired from standing, obviously. Of
course, you would be, yeah. 3 hours of waiting. Like, and there were other people with physical disabilities as well who had a walking stick, and they were also standing for a long, long time.
I just wonder why there's no seating in those particular bus stops. You wouldn't need seating if the service was in time, because people could show up on time. And you see other services around Europe, you know, the trains in London, the tube in London, the trains in Germany or Italy. They're to the minute. Now, I know you can't do that with buses, but you can give a good estimation. Or maybe there should be an app that you can follow that, you know, says the next bus is 5 minutes late, but there's about 10 seats left. You'd be thinking it should be okay. Do you think Bus Éireann can or should do better here?
100%. You know, it's inexcusable to have to wait for an hour, 40 minutes. And, like, you don't know that you're going to wait for this long, you know. It just, the delay just shows, like, every 5 minutes that there's an additional 5 minute delay. Had I known, I would have been delayed for an hour and 40 minutes. I would have gone to a cafe, you know, and had a seat and then came back. But you're there.
But you can't go for fear you're going to miss the connection.
Exactly, yeah.
Okay, how did the elderly lady get on at the end? She got a seat on the bus 2.5-3 hours later?
Eventually, when the bus came, and while, because there was a big queue of 20-30 people trying to get on the bus, she was saying to me, I don't know now if I can sit on the bus. The bus was full, so I'm not sure if she got a seat in the end. I took the bus after that was just behind. But I hope she got home fine and got to sit on the bus at least.
But can you imagine an elderly lady there for 2.5 to 3 hours? At the very least, she'll need a toilet break.
Heartbreaking, yeah.
Not healthy. Okay, let's see if we can find out what happened with that 220-220X bus connection to Crosshaven. Last Tuesday, you say?
Tuesday.
And the bus was scheduled for?
For 4:45.
4:45. If anyone's listening in the powers that be in Bus Éireann, if you can give us a good explanation for this, that poor elderly lady must have been traumatised. Not good for you either. You waited an hour and 40 minutes. But thanks for bringing it to our attention, Zara. Thank you.
No problem, yeah. And I thought about speaking up about this because the vulnerable people are the ones that are reliant on taking the bus, those with disability, the elderly. So it's shocking to have this happen to them.
Yeah, we're getting a constant thread of the state and semi-state failing the most vulnerable. It seems to be an ongoing issue across many genres of public service. For all the good stuff that happens, it is the most vulnerable that are hit at the business end of this sort of thing. And they can blame operational issues and logistics and, you know, they can say whatever they want. But if you're providing a service, we have a texter already saying that they were there. The elderly lady was crying and exhausted. Another texter says, Mick, our lodger is constantly waiting for the bus as numerous 202 buses pass her from the city to Ballincollig. They must be passing her full, I imagine. Anyway, Zara, thanks for bringing that to our attention.
Thank you so much.
Cheers. Thank you. Bye-bye. 17 minutes to 11 o'clock. Many, many texts coming in on the wearing nightclothes and pyjamas in public. I regularly shop in a store on the north side, and what I see there would put you off shopping. Naked is about all some of them are short. There should be a store-wide policy right across the city. No nighttime wear allowed. What was your man in the Boomtown Rats? Was it Johnny Fingers or something? He used to wear his pyjamas, or did I get the... Is that the right name? Maybe you could enlighten me on that one and refresh my memory. I used to be a fan of the Boomtown Rats, but I just can't remember the guy who wore the pyjamas. That was a stage presence, though. At the very least, these people should put on some clothes before they leave the house, and preferably not a pyjamas. I'm sure you'll find most people feel like I do. They just won't say it. I'd love to stay at home all day, but unfortunately I can't. I have a full-time job, so staying at home all day wouldn't work for me. Going to work in my pyjamas, I wouldn't get away with that either. I get the impression that if there was work in bed, these people would sleep on the floor. Ian says their dole money can either buy day clothes or drink tobacco. If they haven't got the motivation to get dressed in the morning, you can be full sure they don't have the motivation to work. Dolly says, if you want to go out in underwear or PJs, so be it. It's better than going naked. There's always one Karen, she says. Liam, ah, Jesus, I was in store yesterday and this young one, about 21-ish, was in full bed mode. Dressing gown, slippers, the lot. She looked like she just dragged herself out of bed 5 minutes previously. This is our future, folks. Melissa says, people shouldn't be allowed into supermarkets to do their shopping in pyjamas. It's disgusting. Obviously, they were asleep all night and went down to do their shopping. It's pure laziness. It takes 2 seconds to throw on a pants and top. Whatever about early in the morning in a garage if someone ran in just to grab something quickly, but not in the middle of the day down in a big supermarket. We'll have more of those texts between now and 12 midday.
Text or WhatsApp Neil now. 0868 104 106.
The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM.
And a very good morning from the Neil Prendeville Show. Johnny Fingers, John Peter Moylett, was the Irish keyboardist who wore striped pyjamas on stage. That was his stage presence. Now to Brown Water and to John Byrne. Good morning, John.
Good morning, Mick.
Now, Irish Water are currently in St. Luke's, are they?
Well, I don't know if there's Irish Water or the council workers on their behalf, but the people of St. Luke's there would want to come out and see what they're getting through the taps. I think it's a HSE health and safety issue with this there. It's like this stuff is dangerous.
Tell me about it. What's the noise there? Can you move to a quieter place, John?
I can't. I'm in the city centre at the moment.
No problem. Okay. So what's happening? Brown water coming out of taps in St. Luke's, is it?
Not just brown. This is chocolate coloured now. Like, this is like something from the Willy Wonka factory, you know? And like 400 yards down from where they're, at least 400 yards away from where they're running it off, the water is still running dark brown.
But there must be works going on in the area or something, is it?
No, they just have a standpipe above and they're what they would call flushing. And but I can't understand how the water can be this colour, because every machine and every shower in that area must be destroyed from what's going through it, if this is what they're letting through continuously.
But this is all in the absence of a boiled water notice, is it?
I don't think there's any boiled water notice, but the people in St. Luke's should go out and take a sample of it. Tis running down, tis heading across the road at below at the junction where Hinchy's Bar is, just heading across the road in that direction, so it's just finding its own level as just coming down, but it's absolutely a health hazard.
So it's literally running down Summerhill from the old from the old Hinchy's Bar there.
No, it's the boys have a standpipe just down from Manny's Bar above on the road up from there, and it's running all, it's making its way all the way down St. Luke's.
Okay, if you're affected, and I believe that this is across the north side and just not in St. Luke's, but particularly in St. Luke's today, if you're in any of these areas and you've got water trouble and water problems, you can call us, but probably better to text us on 086-8104-106. So you've had no explanation. This water is filthy, apparently.
Well, Mick, this must be across the whole city now. If it was only the north side of one stage we were hearing about, it's now in St. Luke's, so obviously it's possibly in every area in the city. Now, that's going into schools in that area above, Mick.
Yeah,
schools in that area.
Let's see if anybody on the south side is having problems. Please text us.
Well, people now would want to pay attention, because I'm sure the filters in the showers are after clogging up, and the filters in the washing machines and other machines are after clogging up as well from this stuff.
And I don't think insurance will cover that if you switch it on knowingly with bad water, will it?
Well, if they bring a class action against Irish Water or Cork City Council. But I think that somebody from the HSE should be going up and taking a sample of it, because it's a health and safety issue.
Okay. John, thanks for that. We'll take a call on it, another call on it. Thank you very much. But apparently this is affecting thousands of families on the north side for months, in Gronabraher, in Farranree, in Mayfield, in Montanati. At times, the water absolutely filthy. Jim, good morning.
Good morning, Mike. How are you, boy?
I'm all right. They're trying to flush out the water in the main supply, is it?
Yeah, I suppose, you know, the problem, I suppose, in the city is Irish Water. I mean, like,
they're not doing their job. Like, this is going on now. How long is this going on? It's going on for years with Irish Water, between Fownery, you know, and up around the north side, now St. Luke's. I mean, the health hazard alone is ridiculous. But Irish Water probably needs to be disbanded. They're not working. Nobody wants them. We should go back to the council. You know, yeah. I mean, the last chapter was on there. Look, the health and safety thing. Like, just kids in a school up there. Imagine they're out the yard running around playing, and you know, kids go to that water tap. You know,
yeah,
and
of course.
When they're thirsty, so they're drinking that. So you imagine your child is in a school today, and they're drinking that dirty water that's being flushed out. How healthy is that for our children?
Did you ever watch the Michael Moore movies, Fahrenheit 9/11 and Fahrenheit 11/9? It's about a city in Flint in Michigan, his hometown, and what they did to the water there. It was much more sinister than having brown water, by the way, because there are contentions that they tried to wipe out an entire city. But that's a different thing. But I will recommend those movies. Are you living in the area, Jim?
Well, no, I'm walking up there, but you know, but look, jokes aside, I mean, Irish Water are responsible for this, Mick, right? We'll talk and talk about it, but the whole system in Cork needs to be redone. Everybody knows the pipes are rotten under the ground. So, to be fair, it's Irish Water's problem, but it's not their fault. It's time has done this. But it's our councillors' fault that they don't allocate the funding here to change all the pipes in the city. How long do we have to put up with this? Like, the next time, though, you have a councillor on, Ken O'Flynn or another one, Mick Barry or whatever, ask him, when are we going to get clean water in Cork? They gave us two super trees in Perthshire Street to clean the air, and they left the water dirty. What kind of common sense is going on there?
You've got a point, you know. We've got a text here saying, the water in my house is coming out like treacle. It's not brown, it's almost black.
Yeah, just tell them boil it up and there's no need for the tea bag. But, like, I mean, my concern here is what's the health risk to our children?
There's a huge amount of schools in those affected areas.
Absolutely there is.
A huge amount of schools in Grawn and Farnery, Mayfield. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, someone needs to take responsibility for this. And if Irish Water can't fix it and can't take responsibility, or if you can't get somebody on right now from Irish Water, well, they need to be disbanded.
They're hard to get at times, the people of Irish Water. But we are trying.
They're impossible to work with. If you're trying to get planning permission and you need to get water onto your site, Irish Water are impossible to work with. Everybody knows that. So we need to get rid of them. They need to go.
And imagine if you're paying water charges, Jim.
Obviously, this is why they won't fix the price, because they're trying to scold us all. Trying to give out to us all because we wouldn't pay our charges.
Yeah, that's ridiculous, isn't it? So, if you know anyone on the north side, we haven't got a text yet from the south side. I have one here. Says, we're in Blackpool, we can't even make a cup of tea for months, and we are spending a fortune on water from the shops. That must be happening across the north side, at least.
This is across the whole north. Listen, I advise everybody not to drink the water. I mean, they need to bring tankers up there now with fresh water for the whole north side, because we shouldn't be buying bottled water. But listen, if there's children drinking this, can you imagine? I hope there's no child getting sick up there and the mother's trying to figure out what's wrong with their child. Because we all know what is. The most basic thing to get right in your life is water. I mean, at this stage, we'd be as well off asking Trocra to mind us. You know?
You might need an Aaron Brockovich to take on the council and do a class action. Even simple things like showering, not to mind drinking, but showering or taking a bath can't be very healthy. You'd probably run a bath you'd never get into.
You wouldn't get into it. You wouldn't put a goldfish into this water.
Might be an answer to a cheap fake tan, would it?
Oh, we won't go there now. I'm sure there's councillors listening there now, and I'm sure, ring the Irish Water now. They'll tell you if there's a problem. You were running the ads recently there. If you have a problem in your area, contact us. We're lovely people. Ring them now and see, can they tell you what they're doing? Or what's their solution? Because I know what the solution is. It's take every bloody pipe up the city, and we get fresh water that way and clean water. Because as it is, it's dangerous for everybody, unhealthy, and I hope nobody's sick. And if somebody is sick, somebody sue the bloody council and sue Irish Water. That's the only way you'll get it fixed.
Yeah, I wonder if anyone has listened to the advert and contacted Irish Water. Lovely people they are, as you say. And what sort of response they got from them. I mean, of all the issues, you can look at issues of antisocial behaviour, unruly behaviour. You can look at isolated issues of violence. But if you haven't got water and clean water in your life, you're nowhere.
You're sick. You're sick. I mean, nobody should drink this. Nobody. I'm advising everybody in the office, do not drink it.
I've just got a picture in on our social media. Our water last night in Ballyvillan, it's been on and off like this for at least a year now. It looks like a very strong cup of tea with no milk.
There you go.
All right. If you
don't drink the water, lads, because you're in big trouble and you're going to get very sick.
And we'd welcome further calls and texts. Thank you very much, Jim. We welcome further calls and texts on that by phone 0818 104 106 and by text 086 8104 106. Now from paulburnmedia.ie. Thanks, Paul. On a firearm story, Gardaí and Cork are carrying out searches in relation to a number of recent firearm incidents. Earlier this morning, teams of Gardaí began searching large areas of waste grounds near the Blackstone Bridge in Killeens outside of Blarney. It's understood the operation is in response to incidents involving two feuding groups who have access to firearms and explosives. Searches are expected to continue for some time. The Garda helicopter has also been deployed, so don't worry if you see that. And that's exactly what it's there for. You can check all the details on paulburnmedia.ie. But if you see Gardaí in the area of the Blackstone Bridge in Killeens, near Blarney, then earlier this morning, teams of Gardaí began searching large areas of waste grounds there, carrying out searches in relation to a number of recent firearm incidents. This operation is a response to two feuding groups. I wonder, is that any connection to the Ballyvillane thing? But apparently these groups have access to firearms and explosive. Garda helicopter deployed and searches, and the Gardaí in the area. Searches to continue for some time. Gardaí to remain in the area for some time. News at 11 is on the way.
The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM. Conversation that matters.
Kicking off the hour with Frick Murphy. Morning, Frick.
Hey, mate. How's it going?
Not too bad. Can I ask you, where'd you get the name Frick?
I don't know. I'm still trying to figure that out. No, I'm 70, but I don't know.
All the Murphys have very peculiar names around the Passage area, don't they? Do you want to...
Yeah, they're on me cousins.
I know, Matt.
There's, yeah, there'll be Matt Bald.
Buns?
There's six of them. There's Touche, the eldest, and there's...
Touche, yeah. Buns?
Touche, Buns, Perky.
Now, he's just Pa, though, isn't he?
Yeah, he'd be Perky, like the taxi driver there. Yeah. There's Perky, then there's Tuddy, with another brother. He'd be Thomas, is his right name.
Tuddy.
And then there's Matt, which is Martin.
Matt, yeah.
Matt is the youngest, and Baldwin is John, he's the second youngest.
Oh,
so they're all my cousins.
And you don't know where Frick...
Cousin Walkie, then, is it?
What's your real name?
Michael.
Michael, okay. And Frick came from where, you don't know?
No, I'm still trying to figure that out. There's a lot of... Not a bit out of the descriptions of that, Mick, but I wouldn't be able to repeat them on here.
Is it two words shortened into one?
Yeah, kind of.
One starting with an F and one starting... Okay, we won't even go there. Anyway, you came home from Skibbereen on a bus. Or two buses.
Mick, this is a good way back there. I go down to my granddaughter there in Skib. It's an hour and a half down, an hour and a half back. But I was coming up and I checked the timetable for the 216. Would have been by CUH for 20 to 5, because it was half 4 kind of when I get into by the CUH. So I said, I'd hop off. So we had no sign of it, of course. Spoke to Yonfley, he had the app. I had the app on my Benjex or something. And so I said to him, he said, oh, it says, no, it's not coming till 10 past 5. I said, Christ. Next, he said, no, it's not coming till 20 to 6. So I think it eventually arrived at about 5:45, Mick. So by the time I got down to Passage, I was talking to Seamus before about that. Seamus came back to me. He said it took you longer to get from the CUH down to Passage than it did to come from Skibbereen to CUH.
Something is amiss here, isn't it?
20 to 7 when I got into Muir Gaffrey Jimmy.
And were you on a bus, Aaron Bus, from Skibbereen or one of the West Cork Connects?
No, West Cork Connect.
And their timing was? Good?
Yeah, 3:00. They should be into the city, I think, for about 25. It's about an hour and a half, maybe a bit more. Coming back, you know. But no, they're grand. But they make no disgrace. I'm on that since I was on the council there, like, and there's nothing done because I got on the one a while back there with a double decker bus. I was waiting, the Rockland was going to the end zone for a point, and a double decker came down, a white double decker. And I hopped on, I said to man, he said, all right, take a picture of this. Slagging him. He said, what are you on about? I said, we don't see a double decker down here. We're lucky to see a bus. So he said, and the thing is, I'm hired. And he said, I'm in from Cronin's buses.
Oh, it's a Cronin's bus then, or is the Cronin's bus driver driving a Bus Éireann bus?
No, I was co-chaired in.
Yeah, because
that's a few weeks back.
The other coach companies, and I'm kind of not including Expressway in this, because they generally run on time. But any of the other bus services like Air Coach, Gobi is the Bus Éireann element, but Air Coach in particular run almost to the minute. If you're leaving at 2:30, you're leaving at 2:30.
You are, Mick, but like it's a disgrace. Like it's, you know, but I mean, you go, you can't depend on them. And taxi general, I know there was a girl on there about the 2:20s and that. Oh God, I was inside in the van there a few weeks back. I was getting north and a half, and there was 3 2:20s pulled in, but there was no sign of a 2:23 or a 2:16.
And the one thing, if you're ever wandering around the Monkstown area, having a pint in the Enzyme, you can see two buses coming together.
You can, Mick, but they come together. But Christ, we were outside of frozen, man. Your man was gone down. I'd never really fell asleep down by the Sankey or what. We were waiting for him to come up. He didn't come up for a half an hour after. We were ready to go back in for a hot tub. We were that cold. And my brother, Wacker.
Your brother, you never mentioned Wacker now in the whole list.
Well, Wacker would be my brother, you see. Wacker is my brother.
Right.
The rest of cousins. They're Malty as well. Like, of course, Wacker's my brother, yeah.
Okay. Used to be a Sinn Féin councillor. Why did you give that up?
I didn't get elected. Mick, that was one of them.
That's the main reason I gave it up.
That's the main reason, Mick, right? Mick, the bus is a disgrace by this being us. Come here, did you take any trip to the tavern, yeah?
I did. I was in there twice. And I think it's only fair to mention, in these days when we hear in the news 6 restaurants closing in Middleton, you hear of bars closing down by the dozen across the country, that two brothers, Daniel and Gavin Boland, have taken on what was, to be fair now, an absolute derelict shell of a building. You could see it bending out. It was in danger of falling down, two brothers took that on, put in the required investment, and I've seen the pictures of the shell it was after being fixed up. It was still a shell, but it was a safe shell. And how they developed and built a bar in there. And to be fair to them, look, it's a business that deserves a mention. Well done to Daniel and Gavin Boland there. They also run the Enzyme in Monkstown, but they have the tavern now in Passage.
Before I go there, Mike, can I get no plug in there for me granddaughter? There was a coffee morning last week for my granddaughter, Letty Simmons, and a Roisin man in there. They're involved with Passage Round Club, you know, Mike?
Yeah.
But they're representing Ireland in Italy there in a week's time. I think around a week's time they've gone out to Italy to represent Ireland. It's called the Beach Sprint. It's a new thing that in Rome that they're trying to implement it now in the 2028 Olympics. But they're representing Ireland, and that's my granddaughter and Roisin Manning from. It's a big achievement.
And fundraising is going on around that, is it? Is fundraising going on around that?
There is. You can donate online. Mick, they had a coffee monitor up in line there. You can donate to a Passage Round Club. As far as I know, that's still going on. The donations will be still going on for another week around that before they fly out, you know.
Okay. Well, very best of luck to them. Right. And I think the guards were very helpful to them as well at the time, were they?
It's very good. The coffee model, which went on very well last week, Mick, but a lot of people donating online is great. But they're training all week now, Mick, so I'll just give a shout out to them. Like, they're training fair sale, the two girls.
Okay, and just
the coaches are putting them through the rigors. They go to Lockbeg there, Mick, they're out there tonight, I think, or maybe during the week, they go training on the beach there, you know, to get used to the stuff that to be running, and that's what they've to run to the boat. Rolls, I know at distance, so they come back in, and the girl on the boat then hops out, and she races up to the finish. Then, like, it's all beach sprints, they're calling me.
And that's all happening in Italy very soon, is it?
Italy, yeah. Week's time, make yourselves, I know that way.
Okay, Frick, just on a personal note, can I just offer you my condolences on the recent passing of your sister Mary a few weeks back?
I'm sure I know, yeah. Yeah, Mick, I'm actually up there now, sitting down between the way I'm sitting, and she's up there and just take me time up the line.
Yeah.
Mick, all thanks right. For that, bro.
Thanks a million, Frick. Thank you very much.
Thanks for the time, Mick. Good luck.
Thank you. Bye bye. That's Frick Murphy in Passage, former Sinn Féin councillor. Now let's go to line 2 and to Dan. Hiya, Dan.
How you doing, Mick?
Good. Now, you were listening to the last caller on the subject of Irish water.
I have indeed. Council staff, a lot of them,
go to Irish Water. And how I know that, I went to the port initially there with a main sewer pipe that has been tampered with. And when we got engineers down to look at this, it was interfered with and a lot of old botch jobs done to it. And a lot of it's blocked up. We went down to report at the council and they told us that the guys that were looking into it are gone to Irish Water. I was in the Carrigaline area. And we reported it then to them, is it the Environmental Protection crowd there? And we got on to them, showed them documented pictures of this blocked and nothing still done about it to this present day.
Okay, so are the council abdicating responsibility to Irish Water, and Irish Water, like a game of tennis, are banging it back over the fence? It's not our problem, it's the council's problem.
Well, the council turned a blind eye to the developers that made a botched job of it. They interfered with us without planning, number one. And number two, we discovered an unauthorised development took place on site, and our engineers discovered that. Now, we can't say too much about
this. Okay, please don't.
No, but on top of that, we have discovered, with documented evidence, that the council have doctored the report in relation to an unauthorised development.
Okay, well that's probably a topic for a different day, or maybe we will revisit it. But are you saying that Irish Water only hire council workers and ex-council engineers?
Yeah, a majority of them, yeah. To the top position jobs.
Well, I guess they'd have the expertise, wouldn't they?
You tell me. Look what's going on at the moment.
Okay, where are you living yourself, Dan?
Carrigaline.
Any water issues as regards colour and quality?
Well, the developers keyed into my water. Council were notified. Irish Water were notified about the storage system as well. And nothing been done about it to this present day. That's how many years now? 2012 to this present day, 2024.
Yeah, that's 12 years.
Yeah. So you tell me, are they good at what they do?
That's a moot question. Okay, Dan, thanks very much. Thanks for bringing it to our attention.
No problem, Mick.
Thank you. Cheers. Bye-bye. Okay. Now, by text on 0868 104 106, I'm living in the Ballyfihan area, and we are buying bottled water for the last 12 months. Our water is crystal clear, but there's a horrible bleach-like smell from it. I reported it to Irish Water on numerous occasions, but nothing back from them. Irish Water needs to be disbanded and control of our water brought back to the council. We never had these issues when water was with the council. Yeah, I guess we never had as much development either, although I take it Ballyvillan is a fully built up and settled area. Not much new development going on there that could cause some trouble. So Ballyfihan area, water crystal clear, but they're still buying bottled water for the last 12 months because there's a horrible bleach-like smell from the water. And the texter says Irish Water needs to be disbanded, control reverting back to the council from whence they never had any problems. Just to finish, before we take a commercial break, some of the many, many texts that are coming in about people wearing pyjamas in public. We seem to hit a nerve here. I'm sure there's much bigger problems now that need to be looked at other than people wearing pyjamas in public. It seems to me all the people who think they were born with silver spoons hanging out of their mouth have something to say. We all bleed and die the same, says Shauna. Danny said, I live in Asia and some kids wear PJs to school. And I don't live in a poor part of Asia either. Feck it, why do people get so bothered about this stuff? Do they have nothing better to do but complain? Seriously, do what suits yourself. Just make sure you change your knickers every day. Sandra said, pyjamas are for lounging around the house or bedwear. There's nothing worse than seeing pyjamas as outwear, especially the tacky dressing gowns. PJs in public drive me absolutely insane. However, this poster seems to have put it in a very manipulative way and seems to be pointing fingers at people not working. You can't assume that people's not working just because they turn up at your local convenience store in pyjamas at 4 o'clock in the day. You can assume that they get out of bed. You can assume they have no job. You can assume they're lazy. You can assume they're layabouts. But you've no verification or proof of that. It would be worse if they were naked. At least they've covered up with something. Don't worry about what other people are wearing. Just go in and get what you have to get and go on. I'll read one more, but there are many more to get to. Jackie says it's an absolute height of laziness. Can they not pull on a trackie bottom and a sweatshirt instead of grabbing the dressing gown, or do they sleep in that too? I was in Tesco a couple of weeks ago and this one arrives in the door with a short dressing gown, a PJ shorts and strappy top. She haven't even ran the hairbrush through her hair. I just don't get the mentality of it. Get dressed before you leave the house. It's not a huge ask, whether it's the local shop or the supermarket. Have some self-respect in yourself. Your texts are welcome. 0868 104 106.
Text or WhatsApp Neil now. 0868 104 106.
The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM.
Coming up on 24 minutes past 11 on this Thursday morning. Line 2, we've got John Byrne. Hiya, John.
Mick.
The power of local radio, is it?
You were talking there about assumption. What about coincidence?
Go on.
Since we spoke on the radio, the water stopped flowing in St. Luke's and the boys have gone.
Oh, okay. So what happened?
I said quite possibly they were getting too much feedback from the people.
Perhaps, so, or maybe from their employers, whoever they may be. Is it Irish Water or the council?
Quite possibly. Somebody contacted them, I said, yeah, but that's the power of local radio.
But the one thing is, even if they left because of the article we did on the radio, and I do take the point, it's a coincidence. Coincidence. It's not going to fix the problem if they've left.
No, but at least the people who's in their mind will be diverted from it, because if they come out to have a look, it's gone, it's over.
Yeah, well, that's true. If they come out to have a look, it's gone. Anyway, let's see what happens. Will you keep in touch over the next few days as to the quality of the water in that area? And indeed, anyone on the north side or south side is having issues. This is going to become a huge political hot potato come election time. If the people of Cork don't have clean, healthy water to drink, that's going to become one of the biggest issues on any doorstep.
But listen, Mick, there are other issues here that people are missing. You go in and have a shower, you can get an eye infection from the quality of the water.
It must be bacterial, this browning of the water.
Absolutely. And then, like, something that a lot of people want to think about is, we have a lot of people in the city who would be on sizes and who wouldn't see the colour of the water.
I never thought of that, actually. Yeah, anyone with sight difficulties may have trouble deciphering whether the water is coloured or not.
That's correct.
Is there anyone could give perhaps a student a sample of water to bring into a school lab or a college lab, and do a test or send it off to a testing agency? I wonder.
Well, there are kids going through the pipes on the outside in the schools, and you know the ones you just press down and the water comes through the pipe for a drink of water.
Yeah, but what, like, in the pubs and restaurants, what about making ice?
Oh, absolutely. And what about the businesses in the locality who are trying to make coffee and teas and run a business?
Yeah, okay. Well, let's see what happens. Keep in touch. They've stopped working right now. The water flowing down the hill has stopped. And it's a coincidence we were talking about it half an hour ago. All right, John, thanks for keeping us up to date on that.
Not about it, mate. You mind yourself.
Okay, to lighter topics again, we're flitting around on the programme this morning, but William wants to talk about people wearing pyjamas. Hi, William.
Hello, Mick. How are you, boy?
I'm good.
And, no, Mick, what I got from the pyjamas thing now is what I got from what the Taoiseachs did in the Dáil one morning. I actually got a shock what he said. He said he's a Taoiseach for people to get up early in the morning.
Well, that was the former Taoiseach, wasn't it?
Yeah. That was Raka, right? That's one point. You had someone on there from Dublin and he said he was a councillor, is it?
Yeah, we spoke to Frick, who was a former councillor. That was about the buses.
No, you spoke to someone.
Oh, Joe Kavanagh is a councillor. Fine Gael councillor.
Joe Kavanagh.
For Cork County Council.
Yeah, he was saying that the area that he's councilling for, they wouldn't be, like other areas, they wouldn't be tough.
Okay.
Right. What did he mean by that?
I don't know, but I can certainly ask him. Just repeat what you said.
He said his area wanted a tough area, not like other places. Like other areas, he said. They wanted a tough place. And I thought you'd say to him, what areas would they be?
Yeah, it's a fair question. I missed it. I must have missed it. I'm normally pretty good at listening.
Yeah, but Mick, I understand that. I understand all that. But Mick, I don't miss much. Like, what I speak about is the truth. Like, there was a girl there texting, and she said that why don't they piranha leggings and all this, right?
Yep.
Well, what is she worried about if someone is dropping children off at school and they're having time? Them people might have dropped 2 or 3 kids off at the school. They hadn't time. It's no joke. You get 2 or 3 children out of school in the morning.
I don't think people would be so critical of mums or dads dropping kids to school in the morning in pyjamas, out of the car, back into the car, and away you go. I think they were more talking about people waltzing around the supermarkets at 4 o'clock in the afternoon.
Yeah, that's why I threw that in there, now, because I knew that would be the answer. But these people are judging people because they haven't clothes, proper clothes on them. These are the people that wouldn't text in to you when they were all on bikes naked. But then, of course, they had no problem judging these people, saying they're on the dole, they're doing this. Like, laziness, that's what the Irish people were called when they went around the world, that they looked like monkeys. They were lazy, drunks, and these people, you see, in certain society in Ireland today are trying to make classes, you see.
Why don't I pick you up on that then? The Irish had a very good reputation. The Irish built the underground in London. The Irish built America.
They built the White House.
They built the White House, they built America. They invented the submarine.
They did, and Mick, there was a documentary last night. They built every tunnel that was there, that's there today, and they died underneath it.
And many succumbed to the rigors of alcohol. I was watching a program about the Nobody Zone the other night, and I think it's called Confessions of an Irish Killer. And I'm not all the way through it, so I don't know if he's innocent or guilty. But anyway, it really detailed what's called the Nobody Zone, which was immortalized in Jimmy McCarthy's song done by Christy Moore. Oh, I'm missing you. I give all for the price of a flight. Oh, I'm missing you under Piccadilly's neon. But the truth's down the West End in the Nobody Zone.
Yes. No, there was a documentary. There was a band member there of it. He was English. He was born. His parents were Irish. He read a book. No Irish, no blacks, no dogs. And he have a book out, and it's a great book. And to see if that starts in Ireland, to see again, to see this, there's certain people now listening to this, and they're saying that's what they want. They want everyone to be arguing like there was a politician said in your show to Neil about 5-6 months ago that Red FM were making people turn against one another. And
Do you believe that's the ambition of this program?
No, not at all. They couldn't say to Neil about what he got home, so people help people get that were living in cars, people were living on the street, that he helped them get places. And these people can say these things because they don't listen to these shows at all.
They don't listen extensively. This program has helped out many, many people. It, by its nature, reflects a lot of negativity. Because from the negativity comes the positive assistance.
That's right. Ye gives everyone a chance to see. There's no class distinction with ye. And you're leaving me that I wouldn't get a voice. If I was, like, I wouldn't get a voice to say these things. There's people, these people, right, if they're wearing the pyjamas, that don't mean that someone puts on the leggings is better than them.
No, I think what people are on about is the culture of, you know, wearing pyjamas out in public. It seems to be becoming fashionable.
But should they ever come fashionable? They're not doing nothing to no one, Neil. What are they doing? They're going into garages. I often see myself. Some of the pyjamas to be better than the clothes.
Yeah,
Yeah, to be handsome, like.
And do you remember the price gouging or the dynamic pricing in item we did on Oasis? One thing I didn't say around that is, you know, we live in very troubled times in this world. There are a lot of dark issues going on right now. And these concerts are meant to be a little bit of escape and a little bit of release for people. And I think it's very, very bad that someone of the power of the Gallagher brothers, you know, and their reach around the world would allow this dynamic pricing to really, really hurt their hardworking fans. People have problems in this world. We try to help as many as we can. But these sort of concerts are, if you saw the Coldplay concerts, the amount of love and singing in the street and peace that those concerts develop, and they're doing it all in a green fashion. They have jumping pads where you can generate power. They run it off non-fossil fuel electricity. They're a force of good in the world. Look at how all the people that Taylor Swift helps, and the positivity she's giving, particularly young girls who would be the most of her fan base, and they don't go into dynamic pricing. Nor does Ed Sheeran. Nor does The Cure. I think it's a big money grab in what should be a release and a happy time for people. Price gouging just had no place. Against the backdrop of all that's dark and going on in the world, the wars and all of the misogyny and all that stuff that's going on, you know?
That's right. And, like, Mick, I know you're a busy man, and once I just want to make another point. And it will make hundreds of points, Mick, but I know you're busy. Look, you know, they will have this, you have this thing every year, RTE gives out trophies to people that they're after making their towns and villages lovely. They clean them all up, and there's a big thing at the end of the year, and all the politicians and everyone's there, and they give them a trophy.
Well, the tidy towns, right. Is it?
Tidy towns. Like, there's people now tonight. I know a family from the north side, and I don't want to mention their name. They go into town every night, Mick, and they has chicken curry, and they has hot tea and hot coffee, and they gives it out of their own pocket, right? But there's nowhere, they're not looking for medals or trophies at all. They're just doing it out of their heart.
Yeah, it's the people with the biggest heart who never look for the publicity or the recognition.
And there's no, but to see, the government won't give them no recognition, to see, because if they show that up, it's coming back to them, to see. Yeah. It's coming back to them, and it's happening. Look at the penny dinners. I know the girl that runs the penny dinners. I grew up with her.
Katrina Toomey?
She's a lady. Yeah, I grew up with her. She comes from the same area as
she's
me.
Not a she's not a lady. She's not a lady. She's a saint.
A saint. Well, a saint. We'll say a saint and a lady.
Okay, so let's say both.
She's lovely. I meet her around there, and look at the work she's getting. And she don't ask for nothing, or she asks for a bit of charity to help her out, and she gets that with the help of God.
And everything she gets, she passes forward. I need to go for a commercial break, William, but thank you very much, all right?
Thanks, Mick, for listening to me.
Thanks a million, boy. Cheers.
The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM.
Conversation that matters.
All of us here in Red FM, from the Neil Prendeville Show team, all in production, all in management, all in sales, all in news, all in technical, were of course disappointed that Stephanie's incredible journey came to an end last night, but so immensely proud of everything that she's achieved to get that far on what is firstly an American, but let's be serious, a global stage. So incredibly proud of her. But we couldn't let the morning pass without mentioning her. Stephanie Rainey, one of our own, who got to the quarterfinals of America's Got Talent, but unfortunately didn't make it through to the semi-final. She and her piano player, Sarah Power, did Cork proud and did Ireland proud. Stephanie posted a video last night after the news that she didn't make it through to the semi-final. Here it is.
Hello.
Hi, guys.
Okay, where do we begin? So obviously, we're waking up to the news this morning, well, you guys are, that we have not made it through on America's Got Talent to the semi-final. Got to the quarter-final, got down to the final 44 out of literally tens of thousands of people, and we are so, so proud. There's so much to go through. So this video is going to be a little bit longer than normal, but we have a lot to touch off. Firstly, we have got to say just a huge thank you for the support that we have received from home, from all over the world. The amount of messages we've gotten since yesterday has been absolutely mind-blowing. We were really happy with the performance. You know, of course nerves are going to come into it when that light goes on and the cameras are rolling and you are very hyper aware that you are now singing to 5 million people plus four of the biggest celebrities in the world. It gets a little tense, you know. In terms of the song, that was the only song that we were ever going to do. Mm-hmm. And we stand over it. I wrote that song with this absolute legend of a human being that I have standing next to me when my mom was really, really sick. And it was a celebration of our mothers and all of the strong women that we have been lucky enough to be surrounded by. And there are many, many of those. So if you connected to that song, that is for you. If you've been through something similar to my mom, it is for you. That's why we would not change the song choice. It's all about the message with us. We knew coming into this that it was going to be hard to bring original songs to the table. The audition process is very different to the live show process. It's a lot quicker. It moves a lot faster. There's less time to get your messaging across as to what you're talking about. Mm-hmm. But we had such a good time.
Yeah, we got treated so well. We met so many amazing people. We absolutely, for 1 minute, would never take this experience back.
Never.
We got to experience it with our families. We got to experience it with our partners. More importantly, we got to experience it with each other. Oh, God.
You're making me cry.
We've been doing this a long time. We wrote this song 6 years ago and we had like this vision for what we wanted it to be. And now we have it. Like, we have this production, we have this experience, and we got to do what our ultimate dream was, which was to bring woman to life like it deserved to be.
So we are very proud. We're leaving this with our heads held extremely high. I have to say a massive thank you to this person here, because without her, I would have given up so long ago. And B, I couldn't have done it. And I wouldn't have had even a like, tenth of the fun. We had so much fun. Every single person we met, we had so much crack with.
Oh, my God.
And if you're from Ireland, crack is fun. It is not anything else, just so you're aware. So that comes on to the next thing. If you loved our audition, if you like Woman, if you like any of the songs that we have got plans outside of this ecosystem that has been America's Got Talent for the past couple of months. I'm bringing out an EP on November 14th. We are playing Vicar Street in Dublin on November 14th. We are playing Cork City Hall on December 18th. If you like it and you connect to it and you feel something from it, we want to connect with you, you know. We want to meet you at the gigs. We want to see your face. We want to sing these songs with you. It's just been the most incredible experience and we love you. And we have felt every single word of support right here. And I mean that. And we're going to carry it with us for the rest of our lives, you know. We just wanted to come on tonight to say this because if I think tomorrow we will have slept on it and it wouldn't be so raw. And right now it's important for us to tell you how we actually feel. So we love you.
We love Ireland.
We love Ireland.
Go on, Ireland.
We love America.
I hold your hand till it goes cold. I hold my tears until you go. Please don't go.
Stephanie Rainey, who did Cork and Ireland proud and America's Got Talent, one of her own, and back next Monday, maybe next Tuesday, she said, on her own programme here on Cork's Red FM. Now, just to get to some texts before we get to our final caller, and it's about breast cancer, and we'll get to that in a moment, just to get through some of the school's abuse texts. Just wondering if it would be possible to send the Minister for Children a solicitor's letter and sue the state, as it's in the Constitution. All children have rights. Credit to that lady, every word is true. Everybody knew that abuse was happening. Teachers, doctors, neighbours, guards. They all saw nothing, said nothing and did nothing. Mick, will you please stop calling the survivors these people? Call them the survivors, please. I don't understand that text. What was the government's reaction to Louise O'Keefe back in 2006? They were a disgrace. If these unfortunate children, now adults, are granted any financial compensation, which they so deserve, read Louise O'Keefe's story. Finally, Roderick O'Gorman is the Minister for Children. He fought hard to limit the amount given to children in Bessborough and other mother and baby homes, omitting many children. In 2021, he transferred 1.1 million to LGBTQ The money was originally for travellers and especially for women of the Magdalen Laundry redress. That will have to be verified, but I read out the text for what it was. Just a couple on the buses. In relation to the 220 buses, on Tuesday my husband went out at 6 p.m. to wait for a bus to Cork City. He eventually got one at 7:05, having went out at 6 p.m. But during the hour and 5 minutes he was waiting, seven of the 220 buses went towards Carrigaline, which is very strange when none picked up on the Grand Parade at the same time you were talking about. And one more text on that. The 202 and 215 are filthy. They need to clean up the buses. Now, our final call of the programme today is with the CEO of Breast Cancer Ireland, Aisling Hurley. Good morning, Aisling.
Good morning.
Now, you have a very, very worthwhile event to promote. It's called the Very Pink Run. Tell me about it.
Sure. The Very Pink Run is coming back to Cork this coming Sunday, the 8th of September. We will be at Munster Technological University on the Bishopstown Road from about 11. We have two big events. One is a 10K and the other is a 5K. And it's a family fun run. Like, we have runners, joggers, walkers, strollers. Everybody of all ages is welcome to come along. And there's a big family festival feel to the site on the day.
Okay. And so everybody is welcome. Do you have to register if you haven't done so already?
Yes, ideally we want people to register at verypinkrun.com and they will come along on the day. At this point, they can come and collect their T-shirt on the Saturday afternoon at MTU. Alternatively, come along early in the morning on Sunday and they will be given their T-shirt to participate. Okay. Everybody that does participate will get a medal afterwards. And there's lots of fun. We have face painters, kids' games, we have music, we have food trucks. So there's something for everybody.
And there's a whopping 86,500 participants have taken place in have taken part in this from over 40 countries since its inception, and collectively have raised over 6.6 million for groundbreaking breast cancer research. How are financial contributions going towards your ambitions?
Well, this year alone, since last Saturday, we started in Dublin on the 31st of August. We had nearly 5,000 who participated in Dublin. We had 2,500 who participated in Kilkenny. And we're aiming for about 2 or just over 2 in Cork. And virtually, we have 1,000 people. So that's over 10,000 people who have participated physically in this event over the last week, with so many supporters and spectators. And what's so fantastic is that our funds for putting on these events in these locations have been covered by the sponsors that are on board financially, which is amazing. So every cent that comes in for registration income, registration fees, and also individual sponsorship is going directly to fund our ongoing research efforts. At the moment, the tally for fundraised income from people who are participating is just over 200,000.
Okay, and as you stressed, it's a family fun day and a family fun event, and you can run it, you can jog it, or you can walk it, or you can hang around at the slowest member of the family speed and just try and get around. But also, it's open to everyone. These are family-focused, inclusive days where everyone is welcome. So that's why we're delighted to talk to you today and let our listeners know about it. And of course, it's going to be star-studded as well. You've got the Very Pink Tribe. Will I give the list, or will you?
Sure, fire away.
Okay. Author Cathy Kelly, who's herself recovering yes. from breast cancer, from RTE, Megan Scully and James Butler, from FM 104, Thomas Cross and Zainab El Ghazouli. Hope I got that right. Virgin Media's Elaine Crowley and Kamal Ibrahim. I know Kamal's mum, actually. He was a Mr. Universe, wasn't he?
That's correct.
Yeah, good morning to his mum, if she is listening. Roma. Alongside sports stars Josh van der Fleer, Robbie Henshaw, Shane Byrne, Jamie Finn and Hannah Tyrrell, and also lending their wholehearted support to the cause of Lorraine Keane, Bobby Kerr and Miss Ireland Jasmine Gerhart, along with well-known Kirkconians Dr. Monica Oakey and Leslie Giltinan of Lean with Leslie fame. There are no clashing colleagues or clashing organisations when it comes to fighting cancer, so happy to give all of our colleagues in this great endeavour a mention. How many have registered so far, and how much room do you have for new people?
We have just close on 2,000 already for Cork, so there's still plenty of time for people to come along on the day and register. And as I say, it is open to everybody. In the last couple of events we've had very young children,
on scooters, we've had buggies, we've had dogs on leads, we've had older people, we've had everybody, all walks of life getting involved, men, women and children. This is a great opportunity for them to show their support and give something back, because unfortunately, while a person themselves goes through this diagnosis, it has a knock-on impact across their families, their community and the colleagues that they work with.
Yeah.
So it's a great family fun day.
So while it's important for families to gather, support each other and have fun, of course, this is all because of a very serious and rising in incidence, I would believe, about breast cancer. Are numbers still on the rise?
Yes, they are, but as a result of early detection. And that is key. So numbers are on the rise, but we're catching them earlier, and hence the outcome is a lot more positive. We've seen our survival rates move from about 72% about 10 years ago up to currently 88% and climbing. Now, we need to do more, obviously, and we are doing more. What we're seeing is we're investing hugely. Over the last 10 years, we've been investing in scientific lab-based research, and we have seen our publications and discoveries, you know, go up 100%-fold. So that's fantastic news. The key now is to transform those scientific lab discoveries into clinical trials where we will get newer and more effective drug therapies for patients diagnosed. The ultimate end game is we want to transform this disease into a treatable illness for everybody.
A noble ambition. But on the topic of early detection, Aisling, should free mammograms be available to all women and not just those over 60?
Well, now, this is a controversial piece, because in an ideal world, the age limit should slightly lower. Now, would I go much lower and offer it? I would love to offer it free to everybody. But there is a cutoff, because if you think about it, a woman's breast tissue in their 20s and 30s and early 40s is white. Cancer tumours show up white. White on white is quite hard to detect. That's why the government, with BreastCheck, offer to screen you from the age of 50 every 2 years.
Okay.
Because as from 50 onwards, as you get older, your breast tissue goes grey and then goes black. It's much easier to detect. Saying that, mammograms are 90% foolproof, and they are the most reliable imaging procedure that we have. So we should get checked. But what we would say to women, younger women especially, 23% are under the age of 50 who are diagnosed with breast cancer, we would say to them, understand and know your own bodies today. You know, you can download our free app, which is called BreastAware, sends a monthly reminder to you, shows you a simulated video guide on how to perform a proper self-breast examination, and shows you the signs and symptoms to look for. If you know your baseline today and you check yourself on a regular basis, if an abnormality arises, you go directly to your GP and you will be seen.
Okay, well, Red FM are proud media partners. I'm glad we covered some of the serious topics as well as attracting people to the fun element of the fundraising. How do people find out more and where do they register?
They can register directly at verypinkrun.com.
Okay, verypinkrun.com. Thanks a million, CEO of Breast Cancer Ireland, Aisling Hurley, and good morning to you.
Thank you very much.
Thanks. So the stars are aligning from the worlds of sport, media and the arts for Breast Cancer Ireland's Very Pink Run in Cork, taking place in the grounds of MTU in Cork, and it's going to take place this coming September 8th. And it's going to be a fun day for all concerns. Listening in floods, thinking of my mother's passing, says one of the texters on the Stephanie song. You weren't the only one, believe me. Excellent voice, says Pat. What an amazing song. It brings me to tears every time. It brings me back to my mother on her deathbed. Well done to her, says Kevin. And that's our programme for this morning. My thanks to the Neil Prendeville Show producers, Emer O'Hay-Martin, Vivian McCarthy and Seamus Whelan. News at 12 is on the way and we'll talk to you tomorrow.